Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty's got the day off today. Many years ago, when I was just starting out in college, I developed a good friendship with a young woman I'll call Kathy. We were both learning to navigate the confusion of early college life. We had fun together, and we quickly became best friends. Our relationship really helped to mitigate the loneliness of new surroundings thousands of miles from home. Then Kathy found a boyfriend, and all of a sudden our time together was cut way back. This was, of course, a normal part of growing up and learning about how relationships can go sometimes, but at the time, I didn't know this, nor did I know how to navigate the new boundaries of our friendship. So it ended, and it was uncomfortable. This hour, we talk about friendship. What happens when it hits the rocks? When is it salvageable? And if it does end, what's the best way to move forward? Call us if you'd like to share your experiences or if you have questions for our guests. Our number is 888-477-9499. You can send us an email to radiotimes@whyy.org or tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. So joining us this hour from NPR Studios in Washington, Andrea Bonnier is a psychologist and adjunct professor at Georgetown University. She's written The Friendship Fix. Welcome back to Radio Times, Andrea.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Deborah Tannen is a professor of linguistics at Georgetown. Her most recent book is You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. Hello, Deborah, and great to have you back as well.
Hi, so glad to talk to you.
So it can be tough to define friendship, I think, just because relationships between different people are probably as varied as the individuals themselves. So why don't we begin with the characteristics of a good friendship? Andrea?
Yeah, you know, I think it's so true. We have different types of friends that fill different needs. But in general, most friendships, there should be a sense of trust. There should be a sense of someone appreciating us for who we are in reality, rather than us trying to be someone else. There should be reciprocity, which I think is a key thing that sometimes makes friendships go bad. And quite frankly, you need to kind of feel like this friend helps you be the person that you want to be. So they don't bring out bad habits. They don't make you into somebody that you don't really like. There should be a sense of wanting to spend time with this person rather than sort of checking it off a list.
And Deborah, as many of us know, you solid, longtime friendships go through stressful times. Are there periods in which friendships in particular tend to face stressors, like, you know, say high school to college or moving from your 20s into your 30s, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think that was a great description of friendship that Andrea just gave us. Yeah, I think there are different times in our lives that we want different things from friends. I interviewed 80 women for my book about friendship, and I heard comments like, when my kids were little, all my friends were other women who had little kids, so they knew what I was going through in life. Then when kids are older, they may have more time to find connections to older friends that they had lost touch with. And then, of course, when you're older in life, there's a real challenge because you make new friends, perhaps you move to a new place, or, you know, even to a retirement community. And there's a feeling that these people don't know you, who you really are. They didn't know me, for example. I heard someone say, in my professional life, and that's such a big part of me. So, I think at different times in our lives, we do have different types of friendships, but they often have a lot in common, the comments that we just heard from Andrea, but also a sense that this is somebody I can tell things to, and they will understand how I mean what I say. And, of course, I think of a woman who said, when I tell a friend something personal, it's like saying, here's a little piece of me. This means I like you. But then there's the challenge, what will they do with that piece of you? Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's where the trust comes in.
When all is said and done, back to you, Andrea, and this is hard to think about, I think, you say most friendships have a certain lifespan.
Yeah, they really do. And I think it's hard to remember that in this age of social media because we kind of get into this situation where we're sort of keeping friendships on life support, right? Kind of artificially. I mean, most friendships do require some level of proximity in order to keep going. That's sort of how we make those friendships in the first place. And so we're in a strange time where I think there's a little bit of pressure to kind of hoard friendships. And in reality, a lot of friendships are just meant to be for a certain period of time. You know, as Deborah mentioned, this idea that you go through different phases. When life transitions hit, it can sometimes mean that a friendship is meant to die a natural death, and it doesn't take away from the meaning that it had while you were actually in that friendship. But I think it's tough because sometimes now there's this sense that we have to keep all friendships going and we should just accumulate all this. And there's pressure to stay in touch even once it becomes a little bit cumbersome and you don't quite have as much daily proximity with the person anymore. Mm.
That brings to mind, it's kind of a romantic notion, I think, but, you know, we've been friends since childhood. I mean, in reality, that's one long relationship, you know, depending on how far you go in life. I mean, how common are these friendships? Deborah?
Well, I think there are all kinds of friendships. Yeah, those are particularly precious. And sometimes it can survive a lack of proximity. So I did hear comments like, we may not see each other for years, but then when we get together, it's as if no time has passed. We just pick up where we left off. But I do think the pressure of social media and the fact that you keep connection to more friends over a longer period of time, it can become burdensome. And that is something that has to be weighed in. So people sometimes feel they just, it's a requirement for many women in particular to keep friends apprised of what's going on in your life.
Why is that?
I just feel like I have to tell so many people this report. I don't have time to tell them all anymore.
Why do women tend to feel that way, Deborah?
This is something that tends to distinguish women's friendships as compared to men's. That your friends are are people who know what's going on in your life. And when women were hurt, and this was true, by the way, for friends as well as sisters. I wrote a book about sisters as well as mothers and daughters. And it's a feeling that you should, if your friend hasn't told you something important going on in their life, you feel hurt. You feel left out. You feel you aren't as close as you thought you were. And closeness is often that pot of gold at the end of the relationship rainbow. And it tends to be more so for women. I always try to remember to say tends to. Nothing is true
sure.
of all women or all men. But for women in particular, feeling included and feeling that you've been told what's important is a key part of friendship. And it seems to be a bit different for men, where maybe doing things together would be the key thing. And a feeling that he'll be on my side. If I need him and I call him, he'll be there. But less likely to be hurt. If you learn that there was something going on that you hadn't been told, a guy might be more likely to say, well, he told me when he was ready.
And we'll get into some more of that as we go along the show. I just wanted to begin the hour, some other quick reasons, Andrea, if you will, as to why friendships can end. And again, then we'll delve into it some more.
Sure. I think the most natural way is often the life transition. You know, we don't see each other as much anymore. We've gone through something. She got married. She had children. She switched jobs. She went to grad school. And so you have that different way of relating to each other on a logistical level. And then it makes it much harder to kind of stay intertwined in daily life. That's the most common. But a lot of times, the dramatic ones are the ones that cause the most pain. You know, there's been maybe simmering resentment or jealousy. There's been a dynamic that grew sort of really bitter over time, this notion of frenemies and competitiveness. Oftentimes, there's maybe something that bothers us about a friend, but we don't really communicate honestly about it, and we think we're doing them a favor by avoiding the conflict of it, but in reality, our resentment is growing, and so we're actually letting the friendship be damaged until we can't take it anymore. You know, sometimes interests change. What I see a lot of now with women is somebody takes on sort of a new lifestyle, even if it means, okay, there's a hobby that's kind of taking over my life, or I'm eating this sort of diet or whatever it might be. And there becomes a sense of alienation. So oftentimes these are the ways that friendships end that really don't feel so good. They don't feel so natural. There are things that are left unsaid. People very rarely want to have a direct conversation about it, even though I always recommend at least, you know, if this sort of mutual slow fade dance of ending a friendship doesn't work, you really run the risk of stringing someone along if you just disappear. But this is what a lot of people do. They stop being responsive. They stop hanging out as much. And meanwhile, the other friend is left thinking, What did I do wrong?
Yeah. What
happened?
Is that ghosting?
Yeah, a lot of times. And people, again, I think this is common, right? I mean, who wants to really sit down or even write a note saying, hey, you know, you've probably noticed that I haven't been spending as much time with you lately. To be honest, my life's moving in a different direction. This is often the kinder, more clear thing to do. And yet, it's kind of yucky, right? Nobody really wants to do that. So they think that they're doing a favor disappearing. When in reality, I work with women who say, I don't know what's going on, and I'm so hurt and confused because this person is disappearing from my life.
It sounds like the end of a romantic relationship almost.
Very much so. Very much so. I've talked with a lot of women who say, look, you know, this felt like a divorce. And yet we don't have the language in our culture to really give this meaning. Everybody knows what a breakup means romantically. They understand that you need to grieve. They understand you might be angry or confused or sad. But oftentimes we make people feel silly for feeling that way about a friendship, even though a friend can have just as much of a role in our lives and be just as emotionally intimate with us, if not more so than a romantic partner.
Deborah, you had an experience with ghosting that you write about. Your friend Susan?
Yes. I was very interested in cutoffs because it had happened to me, and pretty much all the women that I talked to had had it happen to them. And the pattern that Andrew just referred to was a very common one. If women told me that they had cut off a friendship, they could always tell me why. But they also would tell me of where someone else cut off a friendship and they had no idea why. And that seemed to be the pattern. And that's what happened to me in high school. We were a threesome. Marlene, Susan, and I, the three of us, hung around together, both in school and also got together outside of school. This was high school. And, you know, in high school, who you eat lunch with is extremely important. You need that company in the cafeteria. And then one day, Susan refused to have any more to do with me, and I never knew why. Marlene tried to stay connected with both of us, but that meant she was with Susan, and so she couldn't be with me. And I really lost them both. And it was devastating at the time. I recovered. I'm fine. But I always wanted to know why, and I started trying to locate her pretty soon after we graduated from college. She had gone to a different college. I knew which it was, but I never could find her. And then the internet came along and I Googled her, but you know, women often change their last names when they marry, and so I couldn't find her that way either. From the moment that I decided to write this book about friendship, I made up my mind I was going to find her and solve the mystery, because now it was research and I needed an answer to this puzzle.
You know what, Deborah, hold that thought, because we're coming up on a break and we'll find out the end to your story here in just a moment. And also about, you know, when you feel it is time to end a relationship, what the signs are. But let's get to the break. Deborah Tannen is professor of linguistics at Georgetown University and the author of You're the Only One I Can Tell. Andrea Bonnier is an adjunct professor at Georgetown and the author of The Friendship Fix. And we're taking your calls and emails and tweets, 888-477-9499, Radio Times at WHYY.org. When is it time to end a friendship, and how do you do it? You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty's got the day off today. We're talking about mourning the end of a friendship and some of the reasons that we grow apart. Our guests this hour, Andrea Bonnier, psychologist and adjunct professor at Georgetown University. Andrea is a columnist for The Washington Post and author of The Friendship Fix. And we've also got Deborah Tannen along with us, professor of linguistics at Georgetown University. Her most recent book is You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. And Deborah, going into the break, you were telling us about being ghosted back in high school by a good friend. You're calling Susan. And so why did she just suddenly drop you? You eventually found her through social media. What happened there?
So I actually had a draft of the book and had still not found her. A friend of mine who was really good at finding immigration records, I called on him because I knew that her family had been had come from Iraq. And I thought perhaps he could find someone in the family. I thought she was born in this country. He was able to find a brother and an email address for the brother. And I emailed the brother. The brother emailed me, CC Susan. And while I was trying to come up with a right way to phrase this, she emailed me. And we actually talked on the phone more than 50 years after our last conversation, the first thing she said to me was, it was my brother who made me stop talking to you. Hmm. Not that brother, a different brother. And it turned out it really had nothing to do with anything I had done. Well, not in any direct way. The family is very traditional. She was expected either to be at school or to be home. She was telling them she was in the library, but she was hanging out with me and Marlene. And in particular, I was the one who was kind of taking her to Greenwich Village. And the brother threatened that if she did not stop seeing me, he would tell the parents what she'd been up to, and they would not let her out again.
So.
On one hand, it really had nothing to do with us. And this is something I'd already written in a paragraph in the book, that when young people are living at home with parents or other guardians, sometimes it is the parents' decision, and sometimes it's the correct one. And it's kind of interesting. So Susan and I reconnected, and she actually confessed in a later conversation that, you know, there was a level on which she agreed with her brother because she felt she wasn't that sure of herself. She wasn't that confident in this country. And she said, you were so strong in your opinions, I kind of found it hard to know who I was. And that can happen in a friendship.
So is the lesson here to ask if you feel you're being ghosted? Andrea?
Yes, definitely. And you don't have to do it in an accusatory way. I think that's what people are afraid of. Oh, I'm just going to start a conflict, or it's going to be embarrassing. But what you can do is you can acknowledge what you're seeing, and you can just talk about your feelings about it. It sounds kind of couples counsel-y, but that really is how it is. You know, use those I statements. Say, like, I've missed you. I've felt like things are changing between us. I understand that you might be busy or moving in a different direction, but what do you think's, you know, going on for you lately? And if you do it in such a way that's not, you know, you never return my texts anymore, you're more able to get a conversation. But I think it is so awkward for so many people. And friendship, since it's not monogamous, a lot of people say, oh, I'll just kind of half hang on to this friend. You know, I don't have to actually do anything definitive, because it's not like I need to break up somebody with somebody definitively in order to get a new friend. This isn't the way that friendships work. The problem is, even a subtle change, like you used to be each other's number one, and now one of you has bumped the other one down to number six, that's a pretty significant change that the person who's now number six is going to be feeling and having all kinds of reactions to. And so if you are that person who's feeling like you're getting the shaft or you're sort of being ghosted upon, I do think it's reasonable to mention what you're noticing. And quite frankly, their response is going to tell you a lot. Yeah. You know, if they're still kind of evasive, they're not empathetic, they still kind of wishy-washy, oh, I've just been busy.
Oh, see, I wanted to bring busyness in. It's such a part of everybody's life.
I have one thing to what Andrew just said.
Sure.
I also build maybe on something that Andrew just said before. Yeah, often it builds because maybe things were bothering you all along and you didn't want to say anything, and so now it's built up. And so you feel like you've had it. But another level is to start that kind of conversation. This is how I feel about a relationship. This is how I feel about what you've been doing. Can feel in itself like continuing the conversation, continuing the relationship. And once the person has made the decision, I want this to be over, they can feel that it sends the wrong message to start that conversation. That's like inviting the person not to accept your decision that you wanted to end it. So I think there is that reason that sometimes people avoid that.
Yeah. Well, let's, again, back to business for a moment, because that can be, we've all had those periods, I think, in which we're so busy that perhaps we don't respond to somebody right away. It can seem as if we're ghosting somebody, but we're really not. Can you get into that a little bit for us, and how to handle today's busyness and still keep a healthy relationship going? Andrea?
Yeah, I mean, it's such an epidemic, right? Busyness itself, but then also pseudo-busyness. I mean, we're all extremely busy. Some of us are busy with meetings and taking care of children and those kinds of things. And then others of us are busy sort of scrolling through our Instagram feeds and being quote-unquote social in that way. And so I think there's a baseline busyness. And it's almost a status symbol. A lot of people have written on this, this notion that to be busy means that you're special, you're wanted, you have interests, you have activities going on, you're a fascinating person, right? You're in demand. And there's really a fine line between that versus people who feel busy or say they're busy, but in reality, it's kind of a way of brushing other people off. I am too busy to go and meet up for brunch. I am too busy to return a phone call. But in reality, it's just indicative of the fact that you're not on their priority list. I mean, we see this in dating too, right? I mean, in theory, you can always make time for someone who's truly important to you. And so when a friendship, you know, goes down that busy route, I think one of the main questions is to be honest with yourself, or, you know, and think about, okay, is this truly that I'm busy, or is this that this person is just falling down on my priority list? And if you're having it happen to you where you're constantly hearing the other person say, you know, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm busy, but you don't actually see any effort change, then you know that it's a little bit of a false narrative that they're giving, that they're not actually making effort to move you up on the priority list. You know, it's one thing, oh my gosh, I've got this specific project at work and my dad is sick and, next couple of months are crazy, but I really want to get something on the calendar after that versus, yeah, I'm sorry, I haven't been in touch. Things are just so crazy right now. End of story.
So, Andrea, what you say you've made the decision to end a particular friendship. What is the language like? You make the telephone call or maybe even go out and have a little lunch. What does that painful conversation sound like?
Yeah, I think the first thing to acknowledge going into that conversation is really what your expectations are. Am I just trying to give this person clarity about how our lives are kind of going apart? Am I trying to maybe give them a little bit of an explanation because it actually kind of has to do with them and I can't take this dynamic anymore? Because it could potentially get explosive. But for a typical run-of-the-mill, you know, they're not getting my signals that I want to pull back and that I've got other stuff going on and I'm ready to sort of part ways. I think you can use language that's just very respectful, that talks about, you know, I love the euphemism, lives moving in different directions, mm-hmm. as much as it might sound a cliche. It gives them something to work with. And you can also, you know, tell them, look, you know, you mean something to me. Our friendship has meant something to me. I just also feel guilty that I'm really not going to be able to devote the effort to it, you know, anytime soon. And I just didn't want to be unclear. You know, I didn't want you to feel like you were left hanging when you've been texting and I haven't been able to respond. That really is a kindness. And it's like, you know, some people think, oh, it's like ripping off a Band-Aid. It's going to hurt them. But in reality, better to do it in that way than the ghosting and the stringing along. Because as Deborah's story really drove home, you can carry this around for years wondering what happened.
Deborah, you know, in a romantic relationship, when it ends, hopefully each side is clear. This is over. We're moving on. I am not your significant other. But I mean, when it's time to move away from a friendship, how do we do it without it's devastating. But do you say I'm not your friend anymore? Or what is the language you would use?
Yeah, I think you're right that it's not as clear when it's a friendship. And I think it is possible to try to do it in a more gradual way. And so you used to get together very frequently rather than totally cutting it off. Put something on the schedule for the future. Rather than not answering the text at all, send a quick answer. Something to show I haven't completely forgotten you, but things are different. And often I think the best way to communicate that it's different is to behave in a different way. And it sometimes can be less hurtful for people if you don't put a name to it. And it's a very subtle decision, I think, when it's best to actually name it and talk about it and when it's best to just make it gradual and have the actual fact that you're now scheduling not for next week, but for next month, send a message in itself.
Yeah. Let's get to some emails, and we've got calls coming in as well. Kyle asks, do your guests know if the increase in political polarization led to a noticeable increase in friendships ending? And yes, 2016 discourse has been passionate, of course, ugly at times. Andrea, what do you think?
I think there's no doubt that's true. I mean, I'm also seeing that division happen within families. So you can imagine, if divisions are happening within families where you're kind of wedded to the person one way or another, you can imagine that with friendships where you're not totally beholden to have a lifelong connection to this person, that it's happening even more often. And I think, of course, social media is a big component of this. It could be that you used to have a friend that you never talked politics with, but now it's almost unavoidable. I've worked with a lot of women who say, oh my goodness, I like this person at work. We have fun. We joke around. We've worked together for years. But my goodness, their Facebook feed is just full of vitriol and I can't take it. And not only do I not want to be friends with them on Facebook, but it does change the way that I see them. I can't believe that they're posting these things. I can't believe that they believe these things. And so I can't look at them in the same way. And so I have no hard data on this, but anecdotally and clinically, I have no doubt that this has been something, people write into my advice column about this all the time. This is something that really is hurting a lot of people. It's causing a lot of second thoughts about friendships that used to be stable.
So what do you do? How do you negotiate this with somebody who you care about, if you do at all? What do you say?
I think part of it is understanding, can I compartmentalize this? Maybe you have a friend sort of like that uncle you have who you love them, but you're going to say, okay, this is off limits. We're not going to talk about this anymore. I'm not going to engage with you on my feed. We're not going to have these conversations. We're going to enjoy our friendship in other ways. We're going to watch movies. We're going to talk about each other's kids, et cetera.
And do you just say we're not talking politics?
We can. I think when it comes up, it's important to assert yourself if it's getting in the way. You can say, look, I respect your opinions, although a lot of times in this climate, maybe that's not even true, but it's a nicety that you can say. However, I know that we're going to continue to disagree on this, and I think it's causing undue stress on our friendship. We're not going to change each other's minds. It's getting in the way of us being able to enjoy each other. So I would prefer if we end certain conversations about that, and other friendships, it's like, I can't compartmentalize this. Maybe they're posting things that are so hateful or that represent a real side of humanity that is ugly and that makes you really doubt their character. In those cases, I think a reality check is in order. I mean, essentially what we want from our friends at its most basic is to like them. To like them as people, to respect their judgment, to feel like they are good human beings. And unfortunately, sometimes in this current climate, I think what we've seen are some people revealing sides of themselves that when you look at it, you might not think that they're really good human beings anymore. And so in that case, if you can't compartmentalize it, I think the slow fade sort of that Deborah, referred to of taking a step back from the friendship is a good first step.
And then Deborah, if the person says, well, where have you gone? What do you say?
I think what Andrew just said is very much what I would have said as well. I think what's so different now is that the consequences seem so much more significant. People feel that on the one hand, this is really a threat to our democracy in a way that we have never experienced before. And on the other hand, you are undermining democracy by trying to unseat a president who was legitimately elected. And so I think the stakes are much higher. And that's why sometimes people are reacting more strongly in this context than they would have in the past.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I saw, say the person sees something on a Facebook feed that they find to be really hard to take, do you mention that to the person who you formerly had a good time with, maybe going out to lunch with at work or something? Or
I think what seems not to work is trying to argue the substance of the differences of your opinion. When it comes to ideology, and this very much now is different ideology and different ground beliefs about what the facts are. if the differences are that significant on that level, you probably are not going to get anywhere by trying to address them directly.
So maybe the slow fade.
Decision, we're going to ignore it, or we're going to just say that it's there and move on, talk about other things, or say we just can't talk for a while because we're too different on this right now.
Another friendship stressor. Andrea, what happens if a friend goes through a really difficult life circumstance, one that is obviously draining to her and her friend circle, and that can go on for a really long time? So if as a friend you become drained, how do you navigate, pull back if you need to? You know, not necessarily the end of a friendship, but it can feel that way to the friend who might need you.
Yeah, I mean, this unbalance, this idea of I'm giving so much and I'm getting nothing in return, this can really kill friendships over time. And I think you can look at it a couple of different ways. You know, a friendship that has been around for a long time and has been very strong can sustain some rocking of the boat. It can sustain a period where the friend is really asking a lot. And that's okay, because there's that reciprocity that has become inherent. You're no longer counting who's doing who for what. It's a long-term relationship that feels very much like family, where you're just going to help this person. But I think also, too, there's a point at which if you're feeling super drained, you're not doing them a service to grow, you know, some resentment inside. And so in that case, you know, you have to think about exactly what it is that they're asking of you that is so draining. Because I'll tell you the dynamic that I see most often for this. This is somebody, somebody's going through something and they want to vent about it all the time. And yeah. It's all they talk about. Yeah. And the other friend feels like they don't matter anymore, that the other friend never asks how they're doing. And when people get depressed, let's face it, they're not good friends. You know, it's hard to be a good friend, enthusiastic, supportive when you're depressed. So in that case, you have to recommend, you know, maybe you can I help you get some more support, because I feel like this isn't working here for me to be able to help you as much as you need.
All right. We've got coming up on a break. Andrea Bonnier is author of The Friendship Fix. Deborah Tannen, author of You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. We're talking about stressors on friendships and what to do if a friendship ends today on Radio Time. Stay with us. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. This hour, we're talking about mourning the end of a friendship and some of the reasons that friends grow apart. We've got calls and comments coming in. Calls to 888-477-9499. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times or send us an email to radiotimes@whyy.org. Our guests this hour, Deborah Tannen, professor of linguistics at Georgetown University and author of You're the Only One I Can Tell. Andrea Bonnier is psychologist and adjunct professor at Georgetown and author of The Friendship Fix. So let's get to some of those calls. Ellen in King of Prussia, welcome to Radio Times. Are you there, Ellen? Okay, I think we've lost her, unfortunately. So let's go to Anne in Warminster, Pennsylvania. Hello, Anne.
I am here.
Oh, Ellen's here. Hi, Ellen.
Hi.
So what's your question or comment? We have you. You are live on Radio Time for this.
Okay, thank you. Okay. I had a 26-year friendship with a friend, but it was a very unique friendship. It was more of a phone friendship, but we were very emotionally close. We could talk about anything, except, as I later realized, except resentments toward each other. And there was a time when I had noticed, I think I was feeling like I was outgrowing the friendship a bit, but I did not want to let go, except we had an incident that had been repetitive, where she always was, where if I didn't call her exactly by the time when I said I would, mm-hmm. the next time I tried to call her, she wouldn't answer the phone. Mm-hmm. And it was some kind of a power game or something.
So Ellen, so you were friends with this person for 26 years.
26 wow. years.
What happened?
And so after that, I got fed up and I didn't call her for 6 months. And after I heard what you guys were saying about about how devastating it can be not to hear from the person, but she didn't call me either. Yeah. It was like, it's been a very long time now since we've talked, but she cut me off when I tried to call her and talk with her. And I'm sure she was probably devastated, but we had such a long and wonderful history together in the way we did that I really have wanted to get back in touch with her and just don't know how, because she really didn't want to talk to me. But that was years ago now.
Let's bring our experts into the conversation. Deborah, what do you think? What's the first step that Ellen might want to take?
That's a very good example of how the decision of when it makes sense to let something go and when it doesn't can be a very hard one. And I think having had a friendship over a long period of time is one of the things that makes it really hard to let go. I would suggest perhaps you could try writing a letter to make it just a little bit talk on a different channel. And then if she, you know, say if you, this is why I would like to be back in touch. If you agree, please call, write me a letter. And then if she doesn't, there really isn't much you can do if the other person's decision is final.
Andrea, what do you think?
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. If she wants to reach out, I think that's a wonderful way of doing it. But I would also say that dynamic that the caller described is hard for me to get totally on board with that being a healthy relationship in the first place. The sort of games and passive aggressiveness of, well, you were late, so I'm just going to silent treatment you. I think those are the things that are recurring that build up. You know, somebody who has the propensity to behave that way within a friendship, you might see that happen over and over again. So I think having realistic expectations, if you do attempt to start the friendship again, having those expectations like, you know, this is a problem that might not be fixed yet. And what happens if I'm resentful again about this in 6 months?
So what are the words then that if Ellen wants to pursue this, that she uses with this friend about the bad dynamic that is between them to put that on the table? Because I'm assuming you're going to want them to talk about that if she wants to move forward.
I would say certainly it needs to be there. And I would refer to it in terms of the demise of the friendship. I would say, you know, I know we lost touch before and it didn't feel good to me because I didn't always feel like you were willing to hear my side. And I sometimes felt sad and that you were cutting me off sometimes for confusing reasons when you would sort of disappear for a little while. And I want us to be able to talk more openly about what's bothering us so that we don't spiral into these tactics of passive aggressiveness or the silent treatment, because I know that's not being respectful to each other. And I respect our history and I respect our friendship enough that I really want to make sure we're treating each other well and that when problems crop up, we handle them more proactively than we did before.
All right. Thanks for the call to Radio Times, Ellen, and best of luck to you as you move forward with this. We've got a tweet. My friendship with a dear man ended due to my commitment to my mother's nursing home care. It didn't have to happen, but I didn't want to burden anyone with my stress. That was a mistake. Real friendship should be able to handle these things. Deborah, weigh in here. It seems as if there's a little bit of an expectation. Real friendship should be able to handle these things.
I'd really like to move to the perspective of the person who is going through whatever the difficult time is and having to put a lot of effort into taking care of an aging parent would be one, a loss of a child, dealing with a serious disease, perhaps a loved one, a child, a spouse, dealing with a serious disease, because people at that point often feel that the friends that come through are not always the ones they expected. People they felt were really, really close friends somehow distanced themselves. And the ones who seem to really want to be there and help become closer friends as a result. So I think that that's an important perspective to keep in mind, too. If you're the friend, I guess you can ask yourself, do I want to really devote significant amount of my time helping out, listening, being there? Or maybe it wasn't a friendship I felt that strongly about, and I don't want to take that position. But I think it's helpful to look at it from the point of view of the person who is entering the needier phase.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Anne in Warminster, do we have you now?
Can you hear me?
I can. How are you, Anne?
Good, good.
Welcome.
Yeah, what I wanted to say was pertaining to the social media and the political part. I happen to be, well, I don't even need to say what side I'm on. I don't think it matters. But my brother and I are of opposite sides of the political spectrum, and I know that about him. But we were friends on Facebook, and I tend to be a person who vents my political opinion on Facebook because I'd rather do it that way than on, you know, in person screaming and yelling with someone I'm not going to change their mind. And some people think I do it too much, and as it turned out, my brother unfriended me unbeknownst to me, and then on Siblings Day, I went to find him and realized it. And I confronted him about it, and his answer I thought was good. He said, "Anne, you're my sister. I'll always love you, but Facebook is just Facebook. But I didn't like seeing, you know, things that were the opposite of what I believe thrown in my face every day. So I, you know, so he's still not my friend on Facebook. But, you know, and he misses some pictures of my son that I put out there because that's not the only thing I put out there. But I thought that was a decent response."
Huh. Andrea, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that was respectful and kind. I mean, he did it perfectly, right? Although you could argue that he might have given you a heads up so that you weren't bummed on National Sibling Day. But I think expressing the fact, look, we have a relationship, we will for life. I love you. And this is a drop in the bucket, the Facebook piece. I think that was really kind of him. Unfortunately, I don't hear that quite as often as I hear the opposite, which is, okay, now that we're talking about this, things are getting even more explosive. So kudos to your brother and to you for being able to communicate about it in a respectful way.
And we appreciate your call to Radio Times. Email from Lynn. I have been dropped by a sister for reasons I don't understand. Appeals for an explanation, offense, illness are met with silence. When does my asking for contact pass from a reasonable request, outreach, to a type of stalking? I want to respect her, but I grieve the loss. So two things there. First, Deborah, let's talk with, again, negotiating and boundaries as far as Lynn is concerned.
Yeah, this does seem like an example where the sister has decided, I want this to be over, and so if I were to answer your request to tell you why, then I'm doing the opposite of what I want. Then I'm not making it over, I'm continuing it. It's especially complicated with family relationships because many people feel you really can't stop being my sister, and other people feel this is a choice. I can make a choice about my sister just as I could about a friend. My inclination is to say if you've reached out and she's not responding, give it some time. And perhaps after a certain period of time, it may turn out that it had nothing to do with you. It was something she was going through, or she may be in a position to tell you more about what is going on. But give it some time.
Andrea, Lynn spoke of grieving the loss. Tell us about mourning and how, if we know a friendship's over and it's hurtful, how do you handle that?
Yeah, the first thing to acknowledge is this should hurt. This doesn't mean I'm weak. This isn't silly. This is the underside of love, right? I mean, grief is really that underbelly of loving someone. And so I think the first thing to do is to say, I'm going to need some time about this. I'm going to need to feel this. I'm going to need to be sad. And maybe the coping mechanisms that you employ involve journaling or yoga or talking to other friends about it or even talking to a therapist about it. But the first mistake I see so often is for people to feel like this is silly. You know, when I was writing The Friendship Fix, I talked to so many women who this was the first time that they had really talked about this, and they were almost embarrassed. Like, well, I never really talked about this to anybody, but I was devastated. You know, I spoke with one woman who said, I lived in fear for 6 months that I would bump into this person on the street and that I wouldn't know how to handle it. And so to grieve that loss, you know, we do what we would do with any other type of loss. We try to find meaning in it. We try to come to terms with what we're taking with us from that relationship. We try to understand where things went wrong and what we might have learned for the future. But we also sort of recognize it for what it is. Life is beautiful and messy and sometimes painful, but all of that can give us added meaning if we're really willing to look it in the face and say, this is part of the human experience and I deserve to have feelings about it.
So Andrea, what is the best way to handle an encounter after a friend's breakup?
Yeah, you know, I almost would advise what I do as a therapist if I happen to see one of my patients out there in the world, sort of follow their lead, right? So it all depends on how they first respond. You know, obviously, if they're charging at you wanting to have an argument, and you can tell that from their body language, you have the right perfectly to sort of excuse yourself. But on the other hand, there might be times when you're at a party and there's mutual friends involved and you just choose to respectfully say hello if you're in a group conversation and leave it at that. So I think it really depends on what signals that person is going to give and how you can mirror those signals in a way that feels comfortable for you.
What if that person's part of your social circle? Oh, go ahead, Dan.
I think just acknowledging that the depths of feeling and significance of a friendship can feel the same way as a romantic relationship or a family relationship. I think that in itself can be very helpful, because otherwise people find themselves asking, why do I feel this way? Not like she was my lover. Why do I feel so deeply? And so I think just realizing that that is part of friendship can be very helpful.
Okay, we've got time to get one more call in from April in Philadelphia. April, welcome to Radio Times.
Hello, good morning. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
I am calling because you mentioned earlier in the show about friends who may be suffering from depression or not good friends. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of going through that now. I don't know if she's clinically diagnosed. I just know that she's been going through a lot for a long time as a single mother. And I'm finding that every time we meet or talk, it's just all it is about is whatever, you know, that's going on with her at the time. And I've recently just kind of started not being in contact with her as much. But I'm kind of feeling bad about that, because I know that she is going through a rough time. But I'm not really, it doesn't feel like a friendship. I just feel like it's kind of one-sided. And I'm just really not sure how to handle it. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to get some advice from you all about how I can maintain this friendship, but still feel like I'm getting something out of it, I guess. I'm not sure.
All right, April. We've got about 45 seconds left. Thanks, April, for the call. Andrea, you want to take a crack at that?
Sure. I think when somebody is suffering that much, I mean, it's important to respect yourself, too. You can't be their therapist, right? That's not what's possible. And so I think a conversation along the lines of, you know, it pains me to see you struggling. I want to be there for you, but I also find it difficult to know what to say. I find it difficult to know what to do. Have you considered talking to somebody? Have you considered professional support? So you're sort of still engaging with them, but you're doing it in a way that respectfully plants the seed that they might need more than you're able to give. And that also gives yourself a little breathing room as well.
All right, great conversation today. Thanks so much, Andrea Bonnier, for joining us this hour.
Thanks again.
Andrea is a psychologist and adjunct professor at Georgetown University. She's written The Friendship Fix. And Deborah Tannen, so nice to have you along as well.
It's a pleasure.
A professor of linguistics at Georgetown University, Deborah's most recent book is You're the Only One I Can Tell, Inside the Language of Women's Friendships. Our engineer today has been Diana Martinez. Our producers, Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, Alex Stern. And we had help today from Susan Greenbaum. Hope you'll join us again tomorrow for Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. It was so great to have you with us. Take care today.